Oh, baby. First things first, we like you to stare. We used to go on stage in our underwear. When Prince died last month, the first thing a lot of his fans did was go online to track down their favorite Prince songs. The only thing you could find on Spotify was this one recent release, Stare. Everybody jam, 'cause his body's going ham, just stare. Prince was very particular about where and how he let his music be released on the internet. Of course, he didn't really need the internet. But musicians just getting started today really, really do. Second things first. We know you got thirst. I'm Brian Ellison. Today on KCUR's Central Standard, we're talking to some local musicians about whether the internet is helping them make it as artists or threatening their livelihood. Later, we will change gears and take a look at the startling story of human trafficking in the Heartland. But first, to explore the connection between music online and the bottom line, we talk with Mike Stover, who plays in a number of local bands, including the Grizzly Hand and Ernest James Zydeco. Welcome to you, Mike.
Thank you. Good morning.
Glad you're here. And also joining us is Samantha Fish. She's a blues musician from here in Kansas City, touring nationally. In fact, Samantha, where are you this morning?
I'm in Asheville, North Carolina.
Well, we're glad that you could join us. Thanks for taking a few minutes.
Of course. Thank you.
So, Mike Stover, let me start with you. You're serious about your music. You've got a certain following, which you always want to grow, of course. You want fans to find your music. You want music to find new fans. How important is the internet for you in doing that?
I think it's very important, particularly with the opportunities to tour with a large band. It's getting harder and harder. I think it's an exciting time, really, to a new method of music discovery is via the internet.
Yeah. Now, I know you're in several bands.
Correct.
So, what kind of music do you play? What do you play?
I'm kind of a journeyman. I play in a lot of different type of bands. The Grizzly Hand is a rock and roll band with country and soul influences. I play in a Zydeco group, which is sort of a specialized thing. I do session work around town. I play in the People's Liberation Big Band, which is sort of an experimental jazz group. And I do other sort of experimental jazz projects around town.
Now, I would assume that the internet affects different musicians differently. You're actually, it almost sounds like several musicians in one. Does the internet play out differently with the different styles of music that you're involved in?
Well, I've never in my long and storied part-time music career, I've never made a living off of recorded music. I've almost all the income I've ever made in my life is from performing and sometimes session work. So it's not hitting the recent trends aren't hitting me like they might hit other more established artists who are used to CD sales, album sales, that kind of thing.
I mean, Prince sort of famously limited access to his mm-hmm. music on the internet, yeah. But of course he was Prince. Why would he do that?
Well, Prince had some very interesting ideas about how to distribute things on the internet. He wasn't sort of a curmudgeon who was very anti-internet. In fact, he was earlier in his career, as far back as the late 90s, he was selling his own music when other artists weren't really doing that and exploring different avenues to get it out into the world. But at the same time, well, he's Prince, you know, you just don't know what he had some interesting. He kept things close to the vest, so uh-huh. he had his own agenda.
Yeah. Samantha, you're in a somewhat different situation than Mike, or Prince, I guess, for that matter. You're a solo artist. You do national tours. How is your situation different than these?
You know, we're not really playing much locally anymore, and I'm pretty dedicated to, you know, I've only got one band, and that's really just because it's my name on it. You know, if I get fired from it, that's all I got. I can only do this. You know, my situation as far as, you know, making it on the internet, you know, the internet has really helped me a lot. I think social media, Facebook, streaming services, YouTube, I mean, that's really created some incredible opportunities for me. And, you know, it, I think it just makes it so that it's a little more of a level playing field for artists starting out. You know, I wasn't in it in the industry in the heyday where you were making a lot of money off of record sales. So I would just say I don't really know any better. But, you know, I don't know. I think it's afforded me some great opportunities.
So if you're not making a lot of money off of record sales, then how are you making money, if I can be so bold as to ask that?
Well, I mean, you make it off of touring. You make it off of touring. And we do make, you know, we do sell albums. We sell merchandise. I mean, I sell stuff online. I've got a label, and they sell my records, you know, and they distribute it. So, I mean, it, they're getting sold, I think, you know, but I'm also kind of like on an indie blues label. So my scope and perspective is a little different than that of somebody on a mainstream label selling albums, you know, but we sell a lot of our records off the stage, and people at our shows still buy them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for me, it's still a good source of revenue, you know, just on the road and to make, you know, to make our bottom line at the end of the year. So, I mean, it's not bad. It's not bad, but I mean, I make it off of merchandise. I make it off of touring.
So,
yeah.
I mean, are your songs also playing on Spotify? Are people downloading them on iTunes?
They are. Yeah. I mean, they're playing them on Spotify. They, and the money that you see, the revenue that you get from Spotify or even iTunes is pretty low. But, you know, I've always, as an artist, you know, kind of breaking into the scene, I felt like it was, it's almost part of promotion. Like, it's all in how you look at it. But,
yeah,
I could see why Prince felt the way he did, because he really wanted it to be, I mean, it was a protection for the artists, you know, to maintain some value to our music, some physical, tangible value, because people don't really attach that to recorded music anymore. I mean, it used to be everything.
So, I mean, that's almost a philosophical statement rather than a financial one.
Mm-hmm. I'd say so, but it is financial, though, because people really, it's something about what we used to value that we don't value anymore. But that's a lot of our modern society. I mean, when you can get things for free, you know, it's like radio. But, yeah. I mean, we
wouldn't want it to be like radio. That would be terrible.
It's going that way.
Well, I mean, let me ask you, Mike Stover. I mean, maybe we need to take a step back and have you kind of educate us a little bit about the finances of the music industry, especially as it affects not people like Prince, not the big name artists on these big labels. I mean, how does a musician make money if he or she makes money?
Well, one thing that Samantha said made me think about something that I have considered is, like, since we've had music, if you go back thousands and thousands of years, we musicians made their connections and made their, you made your name as a musician just by playing music. And then we had this sort of, I'm thinking big picture here, but we had this sort of 75 to 100 year time frame of the world where there was a period when a musician would make their money from recorded music. At mm-hmm. I'm talking about the like advent of musicians.
They would record it and then they would sell it.
They would sell it. We would have this, and you know, people could make a considerable living from these plastic discs.
I mean, and so take a plastic disc. I don't know how much albums sold for back in the the '70s and '80s, but I mean, what percentage of that purchase price was eventually making its way to the musician?
Well, you know, it just depends on everybody had a different deal and everybody had a different arrangement. An independent musician is going to sell a fraction of what a major label artist is going to sell, but they're going to get a bigger piece of the pie at the end of the day. So that's something to think about.
Okay. But so compare that then to today. If music is being distributed on iTunes, for which people pay 99 cents, I don't know, for a single, or on Spotify, where maybe they're not paying anything, or they're paying just sort of a monthly subscription fee that isn't, that they're not forking over money for particular songs at all. How does that work? How's the artist getting money out of that?
Well, the piece of the pie is definitely smaller. And that's kind of where I was going is that, you know, we are at the end of the era where a musician is going to earn a living from making recorded music. And that's kind of sad and unfortunate. We're not used to the idea of that being the case. But at the end of the day, we're kind of back where we started at the beginning of the 20th century, where musicians earned a living by playing music. And, You know, there's merchandise, and people still buy merchandise. Samantha can, I'm sure, can attest. She has a huge fan base and sells all kinds of merchandise from the stage, and people really connect with her on that level. My bands do that too, to a certain degree. So, you know, the internet is, it's a tricky thing. You know, there's no easy way to answer the question.
I mean, Samantha, you actually are making a living from this, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how badly does that change affect you? Or are you perfectly happy for touring and merchandise to be the way that you achieve a livelihood?
Well, you know, it's just, for me, it's like I can see the growth, you know, just in our career arc, and that's kind of what I look forward to. You know, it's like I said, I wasn't playing and performing before, when physical music was valued. You know, the recorded music had a higher value. But I don't know. I mean, we make our money off of the live show, mm-hmm. and I enjoy touring, and we're just trying to grow that and get out to more of our fan base, you know, to a bigger fan base. So we've had to adapt. You just kind of have to adapt. And I think it's like any industry, you know, with technology and the way people are going to, you know, make things more convenient, easy, and more streamlined. It's you're just going to have to adapt and find new ways to make money.
Yeah. You know, obviously more people know about both of you than they would without the internet. Even beyond the money, even beyond the sales of products or of music, how else is the internet important for a musician today?
Connecting with fans is extremely important and easier than ever. And that's exciting.
How specifically do you mean?
Receiving compliments from people across the globe, who've discovered our music online via Spotify, YouTube, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They always sort of finish off their kind words with, "Love to see you play in Belgium."
Oh, wow.
We're never going to go to Belgium.
No tour for the Grizzly.
Never say never, but you know, okay. Probably not going to go to Belgium.
How about you, Samantha?
Well, yeah, it's like that. I mean, I've had more people come up to me at shows and say, "I found you," or "I saw you on YouTube, and so I came out to the show." And you know, so it really does translate for us into to ticket sales and possibly record sales at the merchandise booth. You know, I mean, that's really, I mean, it opens up your whole world to, you know, people discovering you, and just makes things more convenient and connecting with fans. And we do that. Social media is pretty important. We have somebody at Roof who does that, and it's really proven to be, you know, effective. So yeah,
you Samantha have actually sort of made the leap from, you're from Kansas City, but you're developing a national profile at this point. You're touring all over the country. How difficult is that transition in an age when that touring dollar is where your livelihood is going to be, but before you've actually gotten started, before you've got these gigs booked, how does the transition happen if you can't make enough money just from selling your music, but you aren't yet getting the calls to get on the national tour? How does that happen? Or is that where most musicians end up ending it?
You know, that was, for me personally, the jump, I got lucky, you know, I got to be a part of a bigger tour. I was playing like regionally and locally. I was playing a lot in Kansas City, maybe 5 shows a week. When my schedule was at its fullest, we were really hitting it hard in Kansas City. And, you know, I networked, I had friends, I met musicians, and I started meeting my peers who were out doing what I wanted to do. And I got hooked up with this record label and a tour called Girls with Guitars. And we went to Europe the first year, and it was part of a big collaborative tour, and that's kind of where I started building my career. And then I got hooked up with a booking agency who started, you know, booking these shows around the country, and then we were doing stuff in Europe, and it just started kind of building that profile and, you know, building the live show and then building our following and using social media. And it just kind of, you know, started off slowly rolling towards that, and then, you know, we picked up speed, and that's kind of how I got to where I am right now.
You and I, Mike, were talking a little bit before the show about this term local musician. You are, mm-hmm. you are local and you're a musician,
yeah.
What did we mean by local musician? And is there a difference between a local musician who's independent or one who's signed to to a label as Samantha.
Well, I think it's you can use the local, you know, terminology as sort of a marketing angle. As you know, people like to like the idea of supporting or purchasing products from their hometown. Personally, I kind of feel like using the phrase local music sort of lumps everybody into a certain thing. And the idea that we all need to support local music seems kind of questionable to me because like, if you don't like my band, that's, you can just not like it, but you might like somebody else's band that's also local.
But I mean, from a financial standpoint, is an independent local musician looking at a very different, financial landscape than one who's signed to a label?
I don't think so. Every musician that I know of who are doing any sort of that are like signed to a label, people like Samantha or Tech Nine or whoever, everyone, like I said before, everyone's got a different deal and a different setup. I don't think there's like, well, we have people on a major label. So everyone's got their own arrangement and financial things to deal with.
I guess the other thing I'm curious about is other sources of revenue that the internet makes possible. I'm thinking of, I don't know, I guess you'd call it patronage, things like Kickstarter. Have either of you taken advantage of those?
Well, I have.
I haven't.
Okay.
I haven't, but
Samantha, go ahead, Samantha. You haven't yourself, but you're familiar with others who have?
Yeah, I've known a lot of people who've done Kickstarter, the GoFundMe, to start a tour or to fund an album. I don't personally have a lot of I don't have a lot of experience with them, but you know, I've seen other bands, you know, other local bands who've done really well with them. You know, it's like the crowdfunding thing is very popular, and I think people like to take part in that. It's just as effective in some ways as a label.
And you have used it, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to think about crowdfunding as a way to connect with your fans as much as just getting money from your fans.
They're invested in it.
Yeah. That's the idea. And, you know, we did sort of a standard Kickstarter where we wanted to put together a project that we weren't able to, you know, fund on our own. And so we just decided to ask our fans if they would, you know, help us out with that. And that's how it came together. There are also different ways to do that. There's that Patreon website where, you know, if somebody's doing something that you're fond of and just want to support it, there's that sort of arrangement where you're just sort of sending them money. Thanks for doing a great job, that kind of thing.
Well, I want to thank both of our guests, Mike Stover and Samantha Fish. If our fans want to support you in the old-fashioned way and actually come to a concert or a performance, Mike, where can they find you next?
We'll be at the Grizzly Hand will be at the Record Bar this Friday, the brand new Record Bar at 15th and Main.
And Samantha Fish, you're in Asheville, North Carolina now, but when will you be home next?
My next show in Kansas City is June 18th at Grinders Crossroads in Kansas City.
Well, we look forward to that. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back, we turn to a conversation about human trafficking. It's not just a global problem. It's a problem close to home, too. You can find out more in just a minute. I'm Brian Ellison. Stick around.